Chapter 8. The Doctor Who Cannot Save Herself. Dr. Asha Menon lasted 51 hours before someone ordered her to sit down. It was an impressive number, given the condition of the hospital. Harborview had become three hospitals stacked badly inside one building. The first was the ordinary hospital, still treating car crashes, infections, strokes, falls, overdoses, domestic violence, construction injuries, children with fevers, elderly men with chest pain, people who had not vanished and still expected medicine to behave like medicine. The second hospital belonged to the returned. They arrived in waiting rooms, supply closets, old patient bays, offices, elevators, bathrooms, stairwells, and once in the locked medication room, where a pharmacist fainted so cleanly that Asha was almost grateful for the straightforwardness of it. Returned patients came back in clothes 5 years out of date, holding bags that had not existed a second ago, asking for people who had remarried, died, moved, vanished, aged, given up, or grown old enough to be strangers. The third hospital belonged to everybody pretending those first two hospitals could occupy the same building without tearing it open. That one was failing. Asha stood at a folding table outside Trauma 2 with a stack of copied intake sheets, a hospital tablet with 12% battery, and a paper cup of coffee she had forgotten to drink until it went cold. Someone had taped a sign to the wall above her. Returned, blip. Intake medical screening, first. Family reunification, second. Please do not block hallway. The hallway was blocked. It had been blocked for 2 days. Asha. She finished writing a discharge note. Asha. 1 second. No. Dr. Mina Park took the pen out of Asha's hand. Asha looked at her empty fingers. The glove was gone now. She had removed it after returning because someone had started crying when they saw it. Her hand still remembered being inside another person's blood. Her fingers still curved as if the clamp should be there. Mina capped the pen and put it in the breast pocket of her scrubs. "You are going to sit down," she said. "I am sitting between patients. You are leaning against a table because your body has realized you are unreasonable and is trying to solve the problem without your permission." Asha glanced down. Her left hip was pressed hard against the table edge. Her right knee had locked. The floor seemed farther away than it should have been. "Fine," she said. "Good. In 4 minutes."
Mina stared at her. Asha stared back. They had been residents together. Mina knew every version of Asha's face and had never been fooled by the calm one.
"You were declared dead," Mina said quietly.
"I was not declared anything. I was absent. You were standing under a surgical rig when it came down. Then I was absent."
"For 5 years?"
"Yes. And now you have been working for 2 straight days, 51 hours. Mina closed her eyes for half a second. Asha should not have said the number. Numbers made things sound chosen. A stretcher came through the hallway behind Mina. A returned woman sat upright on it, gripping a firefighter's sleeve and repeating, "My son is 8. My son is 8. He is 8. The firefighter did not tell her that the boy was 13 now. That was kind. Or cowardly. Asha had stopped pretending those were easy to separate. Mina stepped aside. Asha watched the woman pass. No visible trauma. Pupils equal. Respirations too fast but strong. Hands shaking. Panic, not shock. Survivable. The word arrived so cleanly that Asha almost answered it. She did not. Mina noticed anyway. "What? Nothing. That was not a nothing face. I do not have a nothing face."
"You have 6 nothing faces. That was the one you used before, ordering a scan no one else thinks we need." Asha reached for the pen. Mina moved it farther away. "Asha." The hallway lights flickered. Asha looked up before anyone else did. The ceiling held. Of course it held. Maintenance had replaced the rig. Engineering had cleared the corridor. The quake sensors were normal. There was no structural damage above her, no impact rolling through the building, no mount tearing loose, no impossible weight dropping toward her skull. Her body did not care. Her shoulders locked. Her hand closed around air. Unsurvivable. Mina's expression changed. "Sit," she said. This time, Asha sat. The room they gave her was not a patient room. That helped. It was a supply office off the old surgical wing, cleared in a hurry and equipped with a cot, a chair, two boxes of wound care packets, and a monitor that had not been plugged in. Someone had written temp sleep room on the door in blue tape. Asha did not sleep. She opened the tablet instead.
The hospital's returned registry had begun as a spreadsheet, because every disaster began with someone believing a spreadsheet could hold it. By the end of the first day, the file had become six files, then a shared folder, then a restricted internal dashboard with broken filters and duplicate entries. Names appeared under three spellings. Birth dates contradicted old records. Emergency contacts led to disconnected numbers, grieving relatives, legal disputes, and once to a child who answered the phone and said, "My mom is dead," before hanging up. Asha sorted by symptoms. Most of the returned were what they appeared to be: disoriented, dehydrated, terrified, medically stable, or medically ordinary. The blip had taken them from dinner tables, cars, showers, buses, parks, offices, bedrooms, sidewalks. Their trauma was enormous, but it was not anomalous. It belonged to the event itself. A smaller group did not fit. Patient reported, "Orange ocean." Patient heard counting backward before return. Patient complained of pain from injury not present on exam. Patient drew cliff/water/sunset repeatedly. Patient used phrase, "What did it cost?" Patient stated, "Someone else was dying in my mouth." Asha stopped scrolling. That was Dan Keene. She had read his chart twice already because the wording made her angry.
"Someone else was dying in my mouth" was not clinically useful. It was also too precise to dismiss. She opened the linked notes. Daniel Keene, male, 56 at disappearance, cardiac event in ambulance pre-snap, returned at crash site with paramedic Mara Vale, no memory of 5-year interval, reports hearing final thought of driver Ray Alvarez, "Tell my girls I tried." Secondary report from Vale, recurring auditory hallucination of siren beneath ambient sound. Vale drew black shoreline/orange horizon on intake paperwork. Vale wrote or discovered phrase, "What did it cost?" on back of form, handwriting uncertain. Asha read that twice. Then a third time. Handwriting uncertain. She hated those two words. They meant someone had noticed a thing and not known where to put it. She opened Mara Vale's scanned intake form. The drawing loaded slowly, line by line. Black cliff, dark water, orange light. Asha's attention split. Visual field intact, boxes, cot, dead monitor, taped label on the door. But the drawing produced a second input her brain could not classify, black water where no black water belonged. Asha put the tablet face down on the floor. She counted her own pulse for 15 beats, regular. She pressed two fingers against the side of her neck, strong.
She named five objects: cot, tape, tablet, wound packets, chair. She named the year: 2023. She named the fact: "I am not on a shore." The fact did not help as much as it should have. At 3:16 p.m., Asha returned to work. Mina saw her and said, "Absolutely not." Asha handed her a page. "Read this first." "No." "Then I will summarize." "I hate when you summarize. You only summarize when you have already decided the listener is furniture." Asha ignored that. "There is a cluster of returned patients reporting shared imagery and anomalous sensory carryover associated with death proximity events at the moment of disappearance." Mina looked at the page despite herself. Death proximity. Events already in progress when they vanished. Everyone who vanished was in proximity to death. Half the universe disappeared. No, not existentially, mechanically. Mina's eyes moved over the list. Asha waited. She liked waiting when Data was doing the work. It was one of the few forms of patience she trusted. Mina's mouth tightened at Dan Keen's note. Who else has seen this?
I sent a copy of the Vale and Keen materials to Return Support last night. A counselor there was reportedly tracking recurring imagery. You sent patient materials to a community center? De-identified copies, except where consent was documented. Asha, we were drowning. They were collecting field reports faster than the hospital was. You cannot outsource anomaly tracking to volunteers. Then name the department responsible. Mina did not answer. That was the problem. There was no department. The federal agencies had hotlines, the hospital had incident command, the city had reunification centers, the news had aerial footage, churches had cots, police had barricades, families had signs. Everyone had a piece of the disaster, and no one had the table it belonged on. Mina looked back at the page. Why are you showing me this? Because I need someone sane to tell me whether this is signal or exhaustion. You are exhausted. That was not the question. Mina looked at her for a long moment. Then the overhead page cracked through the hallway speakers. Rapid response, West elevators. Rapid response, West elevators. Both doctors moved.
The patient was a returned man in his 30s who had collapsed beside the West elevator bank while arguing with security about visiting hours. He was awake when Asha arrived. That was the first fact. He was sitting on the floor with his back against the wall, sweating through a denim shirt, left hand pressed against his ribs. His husband knelt beside him with both palms held uselessly in the air, afraid to touch the wrong place. A security guard stood too close. Two nurses had already cleared space. Someone had brought the crash cart, because people brought crash carts when fear needed wheels. Name? Asha asked. Louis Navarro, one of the nurses said. Returned yesterday. No acute findings on initial screen. Complaining of chest pain. Louis shook his head. Not chest. Asha crouched in front of him. Show me. He touched the left side of his ribs. Here. Sharp, dull, pressure, burning. He blinked hard. Falling. Asha went still. Mina arrived behind her. Asha kept her voice even. Do you mean the pain feels like falling? Louis stared at her. No, I was falling. His husband made a sound. Louis, you were in the apartment. Louis looked at him with such apology that Asha knew the husband had been saying this for hours.
I was, Louis said. Then I wasn't. Mina's face had gone careful. Asha took Louis's wrist. Pulse fast, skin cool. Blood pressure pending, pupils reactive, breathing shallow from pain. Ordinary possibilities first, always. Pulmonary embolism, rib fracture missed on initial scan, panic attack, acute coronary syndrome, splenic injury from a fall he did not remember, aortic catastrophe, returned body complication not yet named by medicine because medicine had been given 2 days to understand a cosmic event. Louise gripped her sleeve. I can feel his stares, he whispered. Asha felt it then, not a hallucination. No corresponding charted event. Clinical information without a permitted source. A line drawn through the body. This much blood, this much pressure, this much time before compensation failed. She knew, with the same useless certainty she had known under the surgical light, that Luis was not dying from his own heart. He was not carrying someone else's wound. Not exactly. It was a borrowed failure pattern, written into tissue that had no reason to obey it. His body was answering as if the fall belonged to him. Type and cross, Asha said. Mina looked at her. Fast exam now. CT if he holds pressure. Trauma bay. Based on what? Spleen.
His intake scan was clean. It won't be now. Asha. Now. Mina hesitated for less than a second. Then she turned to the nurses. Trauma bay, move! Louise's husband began asking questions. Asha answered none of them because answers would slow the stretcher. In the trauma bay, the ultrasound showed fluid where there had been none 12 hours earlier. Not much. Enough.
Mina looked at the screen and said nothing. Asha did not enjoy being right. That had been true even before rightness started arriving without orders, images, or lab confirmation. Luis went to surgery 8 minutes later. Asha stood outside the doors after the team took him in, staring at her hands. Her right sleeve was wrinkled where Luis had held it, her left side hurt. She pressed a hand under her ribs. There was no injury. She checked anyway. Asha, Luis survived. That should have been the end of it. Medicine loved a save. Medicine forgave almost anything if the patient lived. Bad manners, ugly triage, broken protocol, arrogance dressed as certainty. If the patient lived, the room exhaled and called the method confidence. Asha had built a career on distrusting that forgiveness.
By 6:40 p.m., she had Luis Navarro's old intake scan, current ultrasound images, operative note, and lab trends arranged across three monitors in the radiology reading room. Mina stood behind her with both arms folded. "Say it," Asha said. "No. Say the scan was clean." "The scan was clean." "Say the bleed developed after return." "The bleed developed after return." "Say there was no external trauma between intake and collapse." "There was no documented external trauma." Asha turned. Mina lifted one finger. "No, you do not get to glare at me for using the correct word. There was no external trauma. There was no documented external trauma." "Mina, documentation matters. So does reality. Reality is currently being very rude." Asha almost laughed. It came out as a breath and stopped there. Mina's expression softened. "That was worse." "Are you hurt?" "No. Your hand has been on your side for 10 minutes. Asha dropped it. The pain remained. Left upper quadrant. Dull. Deep. Unknown symptom. She knew that.
She knew it with the part of her mind that I diagnosed falling metal as unsurvivable, Lewis's clean scan as outdated, panic as survivable, and coffee on an operating room floor as blood. Mina saw too much. "Asha, I am not psychotic. I did not say you were. I am not delusional. I did not say that either. I know what shared psychosis looks like. I know what trauma does. I know sleep deprivation causes false positives. I know grief makes symbols out of plumbing noises and ceiling cracks and stupid drawings on intake forms. Okay, I know all of that." Mina waited. Asha looked at Luis Navarro's scan. "There is still a signal." Mina's arms lowered. Outside the reading room, the hospital moved around them. Wheels, voices, pages, monitors, shoes on tile, someone crying behind a half-closed door, someone laughing too loudly near the vending machines because laughing was sometimes the only way a body refused to break. Asha opened a new file. She named it Death Proximity Return Cases. Mina made a small protesting sound. "I know," Asha said. "Do you?" "No." She typed anyway.
Case 001, Mara Vale, ambulance crash, auditory bleed, orange horizon, phrase. Case 002, Daniel Keene, cardiac event plus crash, borrowed final thought. Case 003, Luis Navarro, borrowed pathology response, anomalous delayed splenic bleed without documented trauma. Her fingers stopped. She added, Case 004, Asha Menon, surgical rig collapse, boundary perception, phantom injury. The room became very quiet. Mina read the line. Then she reached past Asha and closed the file. Not deleted, closed. "You are going home," Mina said. "No. You are going somewhere with a bed that is not hospital property." "No. You just made yourself a case number. That is exactly why I cannot leave. That is exactly why you cannot stay alone with this." Asha did not answer. Mina leaned against the desk beside her.
You sent records to that support counselor?
Yes.
Name?
Asha opened her notebook.
Elias Crow.
Mina took out her phone.
What are you doing?
Calling him.
Asha stood.
No.
Mina looked up.
No what?
We do not call a civilian counselor and tell him the hospital has a death proximity cluster connected to a mass resurrection event.
Fine. What do we do?
We contact someone with authority. Which authority? Asha had no answer. That was becoming a theme. Mina tapped the phone against her palm. Then we start with the person who has the other half of your data. Asha hated that this was reasonable. Speaker, she said. Mina dialed. The call rang four times. A man's voice answered, tired and careful. This is Elias Crow? Asha did not let Mina speak first. Mr. Crow, this is Dr. Asha Meenan at Harborview. I sent you a folder yesterday. A pause. Then, Maravale? Asha closed her eyes. Not because he knew the name, because of how he said it. Like a person recognizing a door he had already decided to open. Yes, Asha said. And Daniel Keen. I have another case. Elias was silent. Behind him, through the phone, Asha heard many people talking in a large room. A gym, maybe. A church basement. A shelter full of ordinary grief and extraordinary signals hiding inside it. Doctor, Elias said softly. Have any of them used a word yet? Asha looked at Mina. What word? He breathed in. When he answered, he sounded almost relieved. Misclaimed. The pain under Asha's ribs sharpened.
On the dark monitor in front of her, her reflection looked back in the glass. White coat, tired eyes, one hand braced against her own side as if holding closed a wound no one else could see. No, she said. But the denial had already changed. It was no longer a conclusion. It was a symptom.